Learn to stop thinking. Learn to stop thinking. That's quite a statement. Learn to stop thinking. It's a quotation. What does it mean to learn to stop thinking? Well, we have been allowing our thinking to get us in trouble. When I think my thought and the power of the universe vibrates manifested, that's a totally different thing. I think my thought and the power of the universe vibrates manifested. When I think my one thought, my unique thought, great things happen. When I am thinking, I am thinking of all sorts of things. Now, you say, well, scientists think. They have think tanks. They have think sessions. Not really. Not really. If you were to ask Mark Byerly what he's thinking about right now, what would he tell you? Anybody?
About his engine.
About his engine. Now, what would he tell you about his engine? Everything. How does he describe his engine? Just wonderful. Does he see his engine as being a wonderful success? Yes. Is he enjoying his engine? Yes. Does he talk about anything else but his engine? Not much. Not much. He thinks about his engine. He is not thinking. He is not thinking about 100 subjects. Maybe Mark has, let's say 5 subjects. His wife, that's a subject he dearly loves. Flying, that's a subject he dearly loves. Health, that's a subject he dearly loves. He's very much into that. His engine, that's a subject he dearly loves. And his dad, that's a subject he dearly loves. And he talks about his dad now and then. Not so that you'd notice too much, but he does talk about his dad now and then. But those are his 5 subjects. You say, what about his son? Well, his son doesn't give him an opportunity to talk about him or think about him. His son is off on his own journey and his own trip, and he doesn't include his father in his program. I say, how is Paul doing? I don't know. He buzzed in, buzzed out, you know. Well, what's he working on? I don't know. Has he got a job? No, I don't know. Did he get fired? No, just got laid off. They had no work to do. And blah, blah. And so he just doesn't know. Now, if you ask him about Leslie's parents, he'd know more about them than he does about his own son. And he doesn't know much about Leslie's parents, I tell you. And not that it's bad, because they are doing their own thing and perfectly happy, and Leslie is more in their world than Mark is, but Mark is there too, and that's all good. But anyhow, that's 5 thoughts. So, but you have many more than 5 thoughts. You have your thought about the university. You have your thought about the ministry. You have your thought about, for instance, Ellen, the seminars that are coming up. You have your thought about the working with the neighbors. You have your thought about building the Hermitage and getting that thing all done. And you have your thought about making meals and making them for Ingeborg so that she has the proper meals to eat. You have your thought about the fact that tomorrow is your birthday and we're going to have a big birthday party for you. And it's going to be a blast, you know. We're just going to have cake and ice cream and champagne and caviar and pickles and, you know, all the things that birthday parties should have, right? Mm-hmm. And then she's thinking about the candle that's lit here on the table so she didn't forget not to light it. She's thinking about having my mailing list off of my computer onto her computer so she has my current mailing list to go by. She thinks of, well, and on and on and on and on. Now, is Ellen successful in many things? Yes. Could she be more successful in more things? Yes. You see, learn to stop thinking. When you have one point, one thought, and you think about it, you can be very, very successful. However, if you do not think about one point, if you are thinking about proctoring the lessons, and then somebody comes in and interrupts you, and a phone call comes, and somebody has this, and you want to get the books done to do the balance the accounts, you want to do this, you know, you're not getting anything done. Take a moment and do this. Take a moment and do this. Take a moment and do this. Make these segments of your time. Learn to stop thinking about everything under the sun and think only about those things that are important for you to think about. What is it that's important? Now, if a young man is going to propose to a young lady and tell her that he wants to marry her, does he think about what they're going to do on their honeymoon? Does he think about what kind of cook she's going to make? Does he think about what kind of parents she has? Does he think about the clothing that she's wearing? Does he think about what sort of house they're going to have? No. He comes in one-pointed, and he stammers all over the place. He comes in one-pointed, and he says, sweetheart, yes. I have something very important I want to ask you. Yes. What is it? Yeah. Something very important. Oh, you want to know whether we should buy this Ford or this Chevy? No, not that. Yeah. And he stammers on and stammers on. If he were one-pointed, he would come in and say, sweetheart, you're the most wonderful girl in the world. Will you marry me, please? You would make me so happy. And she would say, my God, I thought you'd never ask. You know, sure, you know, or no, or whatever she's going to say. But there's no indecision. There's no time for thinking. And the thing is, the word swept her off her feet. You heard that? He swept her off her feet. He came up to her and he says, sweetheart, I love children. I have a beautiful home, one up in the mountains and one down in the city here. I have a good job. I've been on my job employed there for the last 10 years. I have a good bank account. I've done everything right. Never been married, never fooled around, and I've just been waiting for someone like you. Will you marry me? And what will she say? She'll say, not bad. Mm-hmm. Not bad. What is the arrangement? Is all your money going to be yours? You know, is all of, see, if that stuff comes up, then you know it's not love. If she says, yes, I'll marry you, and he says, great, then they go down to the lawyer, because he's worth $100 million, and the lawyer says, okay, if this marriage does not succeed after 20 years, you know, or less, 10 years, 5 years, whatever you want to say, you will receive so many $1 million from your husband, you know, and, but no more, nothing more. If this marriage succeeds, there's no problem, because all the money he has is yours, and all the money you have is his, and you just go out and enjoy it. There's no problem. You don't have to have an agreement. The agreement is if you separate. So, now, if for any reason you separate, whether he's infidel, or whether you are infidel, you know what that means?
Mm-hmm.
Whether he or you are finding another person that delights him, or whether you, whatever the reason may be, no reason is sufficient to change the rule. But if after so many years you want a divorce, then this is the agreement. And if you don't like the agreement, then you're not really marrying for love, you're marrying for the money, you know. And if she's wise, she'll say, hey, go, you know, that's fine with me. And she's in business. But you see, one point of thinking, if he knows what he wants to ask her, he can ask her and it'll be done nicely. He doesn't have to bring up all the details at the time he asked her to marry him. At the time they go to see the lawyer, that's the time enough to bring up all the details. And then she can say no. She can say, no, nope, based on this new information, I don't want to marry you. Because I would think I'm just marrying you for your money. Oh, don't worry about that, you know. We've already decided that. If you marry me for my money, that means you want to get a divorce early. If you marry me for me, that means you never want to get a divorce. That means you are happy with me all our life. And that suits me just fine. Whatever I have is ours to enjoy. Not yours, but ours. So we can enjoy it and have a wonderful life. But you see, you have to be careful what you're thinking. Learn to stop thinking. If you're thinking of all these things, I got to prepare this, and I got to make sure that this is going to be right, and this is going to be right. Now, I have a couple of children. I got to make sure that they're going to be living with us, and I'm going to be taking care of them. You know, that can come afterwards. Just say yes, And then, now, these are my conditions. I have these children. I have these circumstances. You know about them. This is nothing hidden. And is that satisfactory to you? And he said, very much so. I love your kids. You're wonderful. But you see what I'm saying? One-pointed. When you're talking about getting married, you're talking about getting married. You don't talk about all of the details of what the marriage might entail. You say, well, you really should talk these things out ahead of time. No. If you really love each other, the details will work themselves out perfectly. Just go to a lawyer and have him take care of it. Pay him, you know. And he'll do anything that is right to be done. But if anyone say, first you want to find out, will you marry me? You'd be one-pointed in that. After that, then you can find out all the other details. And then you can say, based on the further information, I decided not to marry you. And that's okay, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That's okay. But the thing is, you have to set yourself up and know what you're doing. This is called learning to stop thinking. You think about that which is important, and you bring that which is important about, and then you release all the rest of it. But you don't go making a federal case out of everything. As I told Gregor, I said, Greg, your resume is great, but it says you do a lot of things that nobody wants done anymore. All the things that you say you can do, nobody wants done. You're not going to work as a farmhand, and that's how you're trained. You're not going to work as a mechanic, and that's how you're trained. You're not going to work as a greenskeeper, and that's how you're trained. You're not going to work as a University of Healing gardener and so forth, and that's how you train. That doesn't pay anything. That doesn't pay anything. You want to go to work as a competent computer expert. But I don't know all that stuff. Well, learn it. So what does he say he's going to do? He is going to see what sort of jobs are available, and then he's going to go to night school and take courses and prepare himself for them. Well, now, that's very interesting. To me, if I had his motivation, I would go out and get the books of things that interest me, and I would study them from cover to cover until I had virtually memorized them. When I went to work, I had a job. I got the job first. I applied for jobs as newspapers. I was working for the Practical Builder and Building Supply News and a bunch of magazines like that. But I wasn't working in editorial. I was working on advertising. And I wanted to be in editorial. And so I put ads out to see if anybody wanted me as the editor of their newspaper. And Mr. Carol Benson wrote back and he says, yes, sir, come see me. Went to see him. He says, okay, you start in a month. I have to give a notice to the editor I had. And so in that month, I went to the Dean of Journalism at Northwestern University and I said to him, he was our neighbor, I said, what four books can I read and study and learn and be a good journalist, editor, publisher, all that good stuff? And he told me four books. Fatties. He didn't want the thinny kind, the fat ones, yeah. And so I laid up on the apartment house roof in Chicago while Faith was doing her thing and I was up there studying these books. I read each book through four times. I memorized that book. And then I went to work for the West Dallas Star. Nothing applied. It was all stuff for daily journalism and I was writing for weekly journalism. Weekly journalism covers a whole different beat because you do everything. And so I just went in there and I said, okay, let's go. And he told me what to do. He says, I want you to do the photography work. Okay, fine. How do you run the camera? You know, like Anita. How do you develop it? He says, it's printed right on the thing there. Follow the directions. You'll do fine. I did, and it worked out good. Fresh chemicals and everything else. It worked out good. I'm great, you know. 25-year-old genius. And so I went on to other things where he asked me to do it, and I just took my naivete and my self-confidence and went in there and did it, and it was great, but I didn't think about it. If I thought, oh my God, what have I got myself into? Oh my goodness, I don't think I'll ever be able to do this. What's going on? But I didn't. I just went in there without thinking, just knowing that I can do it. I can do it. And I did it. And as I had told you one time in my journalism class at Marquette University, the professor said he'd pass me in the course if I wouldn't go into journalism. I had no intention of going into journalism. But then, all of a sudden, the opportunity came for me to do it, and I did. And that professor checked over my newspapers. There were the award-winning newspapers in the state and in the nation for outstanding layout and design and stuff like that. Just use my imagination, my wildest imagination, you know. And it was great. It was really great. So you see, if I had thought, what am I going to do? How am I going to do it? If I'd worried, I would have been no good. You see, the wonderful thing about youth is that you think you know it all. And that's wonderful. Because basically, you do know it all. If you'll just let yourself reveal that information, knowledge, and genius that is within you. And we should all do that more often, but we don't do that. We don't do that. And the reason we don't do it is because we have been taught to use your head. Think before you act. Think before you jump. Don't go jumping into something without thinking through thoroughly. Well, if the great things of time were thought through thoroughly before they were jumped into, it wouldn't have been jumped into. Madame Curie, she made a mistake. Edison made lots of mistakes, but he finally came up with the light bulb. And lots of people who were inventors and creators. And Michelangelo, he took a piece of marble that everyone else rejected because it was cheap. And he took it, and he brought out of it the world's greatest statue, David. Beautiful. But you see, this is what happens when we are unlimited. This is what happens when we learn to stop thinking and start acting. Now, I know this is contrary to what your parents tell you, contrary to what everybody else tells you, but that's what it's all about. Listen to your inner self and respond to it. Your inner self always directs you right. It's not a matter of thinking. Thinking is whether I can do it or whether I can't do it or whether I have the brains to do it. But listening to your inner self says, I got the brains, you just got the brawn. You go ahead and move and I'll flow with you. And it works. It's a wonderful thing. Think about learning to stop thinking and start living. These people who think so much, they get nowhere. These people who are spontaneous, these people who are action people, these people who are thrilled with life, they have a lot of fun. And this is what I would have you have. A lot of fun. Learn to stop thinking. But listen. And you don't have to think. The divine will think through you, for you, as you, to you, etc. I love you.
I love you.